This is Karen Musgrave, and I'm doing a Quilters SOS Save Our Stories interview with Nancy Cook. Nancy is in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I'm in Naperville, Illinois, so we're doing this interview by telephone. Today's date is April 21st, 2008, and it is 6:05 in the evening. And Nancy, thank you for doing this interview with me. And tell me about the quilt that you selected for this interview, which is Sourwood Festoons.
Sourwood Festoons is one of my favorite pieces. I have been doing a number of pieces around trees, and trees primarily that are found in the Southeast. And that relates back to probably a lifelong love of trees, and even going out into the woods with my mother, and she would help identify the different trees, and particularly the trees that had had edible nuts or fruit that we could eat. And that was just a fun kind of thing. And I think over the years, I've just continued that kind of interest. So being able to do a quilt around something that I have a passion about anyway just kind of pulls a number of passions together at one time. And sourwood tree is one of my very favorites because here in the southeast, up towards the foothills and the lower mountains, the sourwood tree is an edgeland tree that turns this wonderful, wonderful maroon color early in the fall. It's the first of the trees that gives really good color in the fall. And then at each terminal branch, at the end of each branch, it has a cascade of long finger-like seed frond that cascades at the end of each one. And they're in a kind of a beige gold. And to me, it's like the tree is decorating itself for Christmas almost. It's just a marvelous combination of the deep maroon and then again with the beige gold seed frond hanging in front of the maroon color. And I was working on some design exercises, playing with layers of quilting in a class at Quilt Surface Design with Sherilyn Martin. And we were doing a number of different things in the class. And I came across this photograph that had a sourwood tree in it. And I thought, ooh, I want to do something with that. I wonder what I could do. And I started thinking about the color. And I went down to the vendor's booth and to Judy Robertson's hand-dyed fabrics and found a piece of fabric that had that exact maroon color in it. So it was just this serendipitous experience of finding just the precise piece of fabric to use. And then what I did was to look at the design of the seed fronds that cascade down and turn up on their ends and figured out a way to capture that. I took a design of the seed fronds and I drew them out. Well, first I actually copied them on the scanner, and then cut chunks of it so that I had kind of an interesting arrangement of them. And then I drew them off with a magic marker just so I could get the black and white design and of the seed fronds, not so much the leaves as the seed fronds. And put that on tracing paper, a large sheet of paper that I could actually see through, and I drew those onto the paper. Then in the process of creating the quilt, I quilted that wonderful maroon mahogany piece of fabric with the sourwood leaf design in it, and used a thread, a heavyweight thread that fairly much disappears from a distance, but when you get closer to it, you see the pattern of the leaves in the background. And then on top of that, and I just did those by free motion, practice on the leaves on another piece of fabric until I could get that motion working of doing the leaves and doing the veins in the leaves and such. Once that I got that down, I put that down, did the quilting, the free motion quilting of that. Then I wanted to do the seed front, and in that, after I had drawn it onto the tracing paper, I put that on top of the quilted piece and pinned it down thoroughly, and then worked with a beige thread and a medium heavyweight beige thread to do the seed bronze. And then I used different weights of threads to create the seed fronds cascading down the front of the tree. And it just captured it. To me, it really captured what I was trying to do. And I think that's what pleases me the most, that so often, I think when any artist works, we get an idea in our mind, and often what we create is just maybe not exactly what we were wanting. We didn't quite totally capture it, but Sourwood Festoons is one of those that really captured what I was trying to say and the feeling and the tone that I had about the tree and the experience. What I found, and it was after I created Sourwood, is that I had been doing a number of pieces that related to the fall. Tree color, trees, leaf color. And I realized that I really came to my artwork in what can be considered the autumn of my life. And I was really feeling that very strongly at one point of time. It's like, I just don't have much time. I'm just feeling almost frantic about trying to learn as much as I could and master as much as I could about my craft, and feeling like, because of arthritis and declining vision and physical stamina and strength and such, I see a number of people who can't produce beyond a certain number of years, and thought, well, I don't know how many more years I've got out there. So, and I think I was feeling it very strongly. So I've been doing, once I realized that, I have been just kind of focusing on trees and their seeds. And they're so fascinating, really, really interesting. Another piece that I did was on the mimosa tree, that and the wonderful seed pods that has. And the combination, they have their seed pods in the summer. They bloom early in the spring, so then they can have their seed pods fully matured by summertime. So you've got the combination of those wonderful ferny leaves and the almost like a pea pod that they have. And that combination I found very interesting. So that's another one. And right now I've just completed a piece on the beech tree and its seeds, and they are fascinating. Really interesting, complex form that's quite interesting. And the beech tree leaves have these wonderful ridges to in the veins. They're so pronounced that it gives you this, doing it several leaves gives you this wonderful pattern, almost a patchworking pattern going across, or stripped, like strip piecing leaf kind of format to them. And they have such the fall color, the leaf between the ribs turns golden, and the ribs are still green. So you get this wonderful, interesting yellow-green on the ribs, and then the golden leaf at the same time, which makes for such an interesting pattern. That's the one I'm playing with these days. Just finished a small one that I did for a practice piece, and I'm rather pleased with it. I've been experimenting with inks to help emphasize the fabrics. I enjoy working in a whole cloth quilt process, and then working with the fabric and threads and stitch for the design. I did a lot more than just Sutterwood, didn't I?
You did good. So this quilt is 34 by 21. Is that typical, a typical size for you?
That's a fairly good size. The group I'm working with now is a little larger than that. It's running, I think, about 26 by 42, something in that nature, just scaling up just a little more. Some of my pieces have been substantially larger than that, but many of them are just about that size. It's a very comfortable size to work with, and a lot of my work I make and use in my own home until it's sold, so that works well too.
So what are your plans for Sourwood festoons?
I'm sorry, what?
What is your plans for Sourwood festoons?
Well, it is on my website now. It is currently in a gallery. And if it sells, I hope it finds a very happy home. They're kind of like children. You want them to have good mates and find a good home. Otherwise, I'll keep it and enjoy it and bring it out every fall. Because I certainly enjoy it still.
Tell me about your interest in quilt making.
I'm sorry, what?
Tell me about your interest in quilt making.
Well, I grew up with quilts, but I grew up with a mother who was a professional seamstress who did not have the patience to teach me how to sew. I took the obligatory home ec program and made a skirt that I hated and never wore. I did not really learn to sew until I was an adult and had to do the curtains for my new home. We had spent every bit of money we had on the down payment and the refrigerator that we had to buy for it. So, and with a new baby coming, we didn't have the money for the curtains, so I went to one of our wonderful North Carolina textile mill outlets that we used to have and bought the fabric and made them and ended up having to remake every curtain because the sizes were essentially the size of the window opening and did not include the molding. So the 18-foot picture window and side windows that I had in the front room actually turned out to be 22 feet, so everything had to be remade. I didn't sew again for years. And my mother, whose mother and grandmother both quilted, and I have quilts from them, she thought the idea of cutting up fabric and sewing it back together again was absolutely ludicrous. I mean, you could buy a blanket. It was so much easier than making a quilt. And I grew up with that kind of thought that I enjoyed them, but I certainly had no interest in doing them. But I love fabric. My mother made all my clothing, and some of my favorite memories of my mom are when either she would find a gorgeous piece of fabric or I would, and we would plan what she was going to do with it. And that was just a joy. So I love shopping for fabric and looking at fabric and touching and handling fabric, even though I wasn't doing anything with it personally. So I kept, even as an adult, I would go in and look for fabric and kept going into a quilt shop here in Charlotte and saw a pattern that I thought, oh, I just love it. It was white trilliums. And I just thought, oh, I just love that. And I realized the only way to have that piece was to make it. So I bought it and cut this piece out with my sewing shears that I had. I knew nothing about things like rotary cutters or rulers or mats or anything else. But I did have a good friend who lived out in Oklahoma who was a quilter and was even doing quilt restoration for museums. So I was calling her and saying, Sue, how do I make a quarter of an inch stem without it fraying on both sides? And so she would try to teach me over the telephone how to do whatever I was doing. Well, that was an intermediate to advanced quilt pattern that I had bought. And it was a small wall hanging, but the complexity of the piece, it was done by a person who actually designed for cross stitch, so the complexity of the applique work was pretty dramatic. But I made it, and when I got it finished, I put a piece of black felt on the back so nobody could see my quilt stitches because they were so bad. But I absolutely loved it. And then I saw something else at our local quilt show, and I thought, I could do that, because I had done handwork all my life. I'd done some embroidery or crewel or needlework of some kind, macrame even. But that was strictly as an application. And then I made something else. And then it was like, I really need some more pillows for the couch. So I made some pillows. So it was just kind of inching in. And finally joined the quilt guild, not so much because I wanted to make quilts as I enjoyed being around people who did quilt. And got started somewhat slowly, but found that I was really enjoying it a lot. I have always found my needlework to be a good balance in life to what I had done both as professional and as a volunteer. So much of the time I was working on things that were so either long range that it was hard to see what you had gotten accomplished from one day to the next, or they were things where you were influencing organizations or individuals, and maybe you could look back in a year and see what had been accomplished, but very little that you could go and say, I put in 8 hours and I had 8 hours of accomplishment. But with what I did with a needle and thread, if I put in an hour, you could see an hour's worth of results, and that I'm kind of results oriented. So that, I think, provided that kind of balance. And about 6 years ago, I retired professionally from what I was doing as an industrial psychologist, organizational psychologist, and began working full-time in doing quilt making. So that has been just a real joy.
So whose works are you drawn to and why?
Oh, the first quilts that excited me beyond measure were a group of quilts by African American quilters. And it was in the History Museum in Columbus, Ohio. I lived in Ohio for a number of years. I don't know the group of quilts. That's all I can, but they were pictorial quilts by and large. And there was such freedom and color and life to them that they just tremendously excited me because I'd never seen anything. Everything I'd ever seen had been pretty straightforward patchwork quilt, block patchwork quilt, some applique work, but mainly what my family did was block quilts. And I just found them tremendously exciting. And then later, I met that same friend, Sue Rose, that I mentioned before, in Paducah. I was at a conference out in Sioux City, not Sioux City, St. Louis, and often Sue and I try to get together about every year or two, And so I called her up and said, hey, I'm going to be in St. Louis. Would you like to meet me? And we'll spend some time there after the conference is over. And she says, well, I can't. I'm going to the AQS show with the Duke. And I said, well, what's that? Because I certainly wasn't a quilter at that time. And it turned out one of the people that had been going with her group had to cancel out. So they had space in the bed and breakfast they were staying in, or the person's home they were staying in. So I met them there, and I went to the Paducah Quilt Show long before I was ever a quilter. Well, it was the year they opened the Museum of American Quilts. And I walked in, and I saw Carol Breyer Fowler's Solar Eclipse 2 and was totally bowled over with the color, the movement, the design, the ability to capture such a magnificent concept and idea. And I think Carol's work is something over the years that I really, really loved. Ruth McDowell is another person I have studied with and really like her work a lot. Certainly has had a lot of influence on my piece work because I not only do whole cloth quilts, but I do some piecing, and it's usually done in much of the style that Ruth McDowell uses and teaches. Patty Hawkins' work, she deals with similar kind of motifs and concepts that I do, and she has such an ability to abstract the essence of what she's trying to say. And I really admire what she does. Holly Shadlin. I mean, there's just so many that are just so wonderful. Judith Content, her estuaries, her use of silk and dyeing and shibori and applique to create these wonderful evening scenes on the water are just wonderful. And I can continue, because there's just a number out there whose work is just phenomenal and very exciting to see.
What does your friend Sue think of your quilt making?
I'm sorry, what?
Your friend Sue? What does she think of your quilt making?
Oh, I think Sue has been delighted to see that I continued on with it. She has been a big influence to me. We were next door neighbors for about 7 years. Back in Ames, Iowa, and then she and her husband and family moved to Centerville, Ohio, and we were neighbors there for a little bit, and then she and her family moved first to Missouri and then out to Oklahoma, and my family moved from first Ames, Iowa to Centerville, Ohio, and then now in Charlotte, but we've constantly kept in touch. So her work is more traditional than mine, and she's had the opportunity to work with a critique group over many years, and it's been interesting. They call themselves a color group, and I think they probably aged out of meeting regularly anymore, but we've spent many an hour on the phone talking quilting as well as sharing what we have to what we've done with first photographs and now CDs and emails.
Do you think of yourself more as an artist or a quilt maker, or do you even make the distinction?
That's a really good question.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I make a huge distinction there. If I had to weigh on one side or the other, it would probably be artist, but artist with a particular medium that draws me more than others do. And certainly the world of fiber has drawn me all my life in one way or another.
What do you think is the biggest challenge confronting quilt makers today?
Oh, the biggest challenge?
Mm-hmm.
Confronting quilt makers today. I'm going to answer that in several different ways.
Oh, excellent.
I think the biggest challenge to quilt makers from a traditional standpoint today is that more and more of their sources are drying up. Many people will shop for fabric online or send an online e-store swatches of fabric and say, select some fabrics to go with this and send them to me. But many people don't want to do it that way. They want to be able to touch and feel it themselves in making their selections. So I think sourcing materials is an issue for many, and particularly traditional quilters, unless they live in an area where there are a lot of resources available. For the art quilter, I think one, getting recognition for the medium as an art form is probably the biggest issue. And that's in no small part related to its having been perceived as one of the lesser crafts, and very likely because it was primarily women who did it, but crafts by and large being somewhat harder to be seen as an art form. And so from a sales standpoint, the economy is not helping at this point in time. Okay, let's see. Challenges. That pretty much covers it.
Describe your studio.
My studio is in the lower level of the house. Our house is perched on the side of a hill, so you go upstairs to get into the living area. Initially, I started in part of the smallest guest bedroom, and then went into the largest guest bedroom, and now I have moved into an area that is it's in the basement area, but it's where my husband's office had been, and he very kindly exchanged place with me so I could have more office space and more studio space. But it's a combination of office and studio. So let's describe it. One end of the wall, it's a longer wall than it is square, longer room than it is square. And one of the shorter walls, it has bookcases, floor to ceiling, wall to wall, and they're just loaded with quilt books and magazines and supplies. There's some other stuff from a former hobby that I haven't totally weeded out yet, but they're moving out. And then I have a cutting table, pressing table that my husband constructed for me out of two TV stands. Back when TVs weren't as large as they are today, that he put on a riser and backed them up so they have two shelves on each side, and then put a box on top of them that I can do. Slide my long rulers and my big drawing pads and my freezer my box of freezer paper and stuff in there, and it's designed to be the exact size as a cutting board that I have, and that's at the right height for me ergonomically, which is just I almost can't cut on anything else anymore. It's so helpful. And then he constructed a table for me out of a I think this was lifted out of a door. But anyway, it's a very large piece that is covered with formica, and my sewing machine drops in it so that it's flat and level and large. It's really, really large and just wonderful because I can really get a large quilt on there for quilting. But it also, I have too much stuff on top of it. It's a little cluttered at this point. Underneath, I have bins of fabric and bins of interfacing. And then the other, that's kind of like in one half of the room. The other half of the room has a design wall that's floor to ceiling and probably 8 feet wide that, again, my husband constructed for me. And it has both a white surface and a black surface, so I can use it either way that I want to. I can just take the black felt down and use the other, the white surface when I want to. And there's a window next to that, and between the window and the design wall is a two-drawer file cabinet. On top of that's a little TV. And then in front of the design wall on the right side is a desk with four file drawers in it and a computer, printer, telephone, all that kind of stuff. On the other side of the room is another file cabinet that's got a bunch of stuff, and it's embedded in the wall, and next to it is a large closet that opens up, and it is, I've got shelves in that, and then hanging bars for my fabric. So that's where most of the fabric that I use, my batiks and hand dyes are all in there. And then fabrics that are from earlier years are in bins and in the garage and in the room stacked on top of each other. And those are, I haven't quite been able to let go of them yet, but they'll have to move out at some period of time. And then I have another, it's a design wall, but I use it more as a inspiration wall. Between the computer setup and the design wall at the end of the room. So, does that describe it?
Yeah. Sounds like a nice place.
It is. I had the opportunity to have a residency at McCall Center for Visual Arts for 4 months and had a fantastic studio there. And I learned there I need 18 feet. I need to be able to see my quilts from 18 feet away to really understand the visual impact of a large piece. And so that was part of the reason we moved me downstairs, is I could get that 18 feet distance from the quilt in the room. The room's probably 22 feet with if you've included the room that the space that the bookcases are in. And so that's really helpful to be able to get that view. I tried all kinds of other things to, you know, try to look through the door hole lookers and the wrong end of binoculars and all that kind of stuff. Nothing's quite as effective as being able to see the stuff from a distance. Oh, and I have really excellent lighting installed in the room too. I have two sets of four tube fluorescent lights that include that use the daylight fluorescent tubes, and also have some floodlights that are focused on the design wall.
How many hours a week do you quilt?
Not enough.
Good answer.
Well, the this last year and a half, my mother-in-law was in her 90s, was quite ill and needed a lot of care and attention. And this year she became quite ill, fell, broke her arm, and had a long period where she was trying to recuperate and then had a stroke and died. And working with cleaning up her place after she was gone, and just the kind of lethargy that I find sets in with mourning.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been coming out of that. So probably right now I'm spending about 10, 12 hours, but when things are flowing right, it's closer to 30, 35. I never quite made it to the 40 that I thought I would do, but it's moving back in the right direction, and that's just so good.
Have you ever used quilts to get through a difficult time?
I'm sorry, what?
Have you ever used quilts to get through a difficult time?
Oh, heavens, yes. Heavens, yes. I remember as the, what might be called the drums of war were beating before we went into Iraq the second time, I got out fabric and just literally had to work on something interesting and fun, and that was a piece that really saw me through doing that. And I do more hand work. Well, I guess so much of what I've had to do more recently with difficult times has been sitting in hospital rooms, that type of thing. And so I was taking a lot of handwork with me. So I've been doing more embroidery recently in that regard. But oh yeah.
What makes a quilt artistically powerful?
What makes a quilt artistically powerful?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a good question. I think it's when the artist understands what he or she is trying to say and has the ability to use art elements to convey that in a way that comes across to the viewer. To me, art is communication. It's like writing or music or conversation. It's a communication between the artist and something inside the artist, whether it's anger or love or passion but something inside the artist, so that the first communication is the artist understanding that part of themselves that's trying to come out. And it's usually at some level that's not totally conscious, but pulling into something that's maybe deeper than what you could articulate. So that's kind of the first communication. It's almost inside the artist, and then inside the artist to the artwork, with the artwork, and then with the artwork to the viewer. And some artists are able to have artwork that really helps the viewer understand something that they've never understood before. And sometimes that's not even at a real verbal level. Now, in terms of art elements, I think great line, great color. But some of the most interesting art I see is almost devoid of color. I see some artists who are almost trying to get away from the use of color to do their art, because it's so seductive. But I'm drawn to color. I'm drawn to texture. But but good line and movement, I find compel me.
Are there any aspects of making a quilt that you do not enjoy?
Are there any aspects of the quilt I do not enjoy?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, putting a binding on. But I think it needs to be done well. I'm one of those who likes to see work not only have something to say and be meaningful, but also to be well executed. I find some people can work raw edge and loose and do it successfully. I don't find that something I do with comfort. But let's see, what else do I have? Oh, sometimes I find piecing a curve just a little tedium if it's too tight a curve to begin with. Cleaning the machine, which I do every time I change the bobbin.
Oh, you're good.
Well, I find it works. It's the old saying, pay me now, pay me later. My machine, if I don't clean it regularly, just absolutely doesn't perform well. So cleaning is, that was what something Linda Lehman taught, Libby Lehman taught, and it taught it well, that cleaning the machine on a regular basis will pay you large dividends. There's some things that I find, oh, Lord, the paperwork involved in being a professional quilter and trying to keep your work out there and that type of thing. That's probably my least favorite thing, but highly important.
Do you belong to any art or quilt groups?
I belong to... I belong to both craft and quilt groups. I belong to my local quilt guild. I continue to support them. They supported me, and I continue to support them. I belong to SACWA. I'm a professional member of SACWA, and that has certainly been something that I've found very valuable. I'm generally and regularly a member of International Quilt Association and American Crafts Association. And my goal this year is to join at least one regional or local art association.
And why is that important to you?
I'm finding more and more I'm identifying with the art part. And I have just a real commitment for people to understand that art can be made in the quilt format medium, and I think the way to do that is to be out there with other artists and to be associated with other artists.
You've mentioned taking a lot of classes. Is that important to you also, I'm assuming?
I find that it's part of the way that I kind of nurture the artist within me is to take classes, both to learn. I find anybody who has done things really well, who I admire, I will learn something from. It may not be precisely what the class is about. It may be something else, but they've always learned something that I can learn from. And it's just such a pleasure to spend a day just focused in on some aspect or a day, preferably a week. My preference is long classes, 3-day minimum class. It's a restorative thing. It used to be the way I learned. And part of what I was trying to do was learn as fast as I could. but now it's more nurturing than it is so much that I'm trying to learn so much anymore.
Is there anything else you would like to add to the interview before we conclude?
I'm seeing more and more people wanting to learn more about basic art elements and principles and utilize them as people try to work and make their own original creations. They're realizing that they need to go back to the fundamentals that make any art good and learn what those are, because trying to stumble your way into it is not necessarily as quick and easy as is learning some basics to make your work better. And I think that's a healthy trend.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to spend it with me. And we are going to conclude our interview at 6